Hello and welcome to Season 12, Episode 12 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's a gross of episodes. Today we're going to be talking about what Alan and Martin did in Montreal. I hope it was Montreal and I didn't get that wrong.
Nope.
Excellent. And we'll also talk about some command line love. And we'll go over some of your feedback. So, fellows, what have you been up to recently?
I've been to Montreal.
Oh, have you?
I've also been to Montreal.
Well, can we talk about that then?
Should we do that?
Yeah.
So, as you might have heard, Alan and Martin have been to Montreal. I believe that there was some sort of Snapcraft summit in Montreal on the or around the 22nd of March.
No.
So, no, it wasn't. No.
It was last week.
It was last week because you went there directly after Foss Talk Live. I'm reading a date off a completely wrong page.
Yes.
So why don't you tell me what happened rather than me trying to gather it from some strangeness?
I suspect you're viewing a blog post where we announced said Snapcraft Summit.
Oh, there you go.
So this is the fourth one that we've done. We've done previous Snapcraft Summits in such high-class places as New York and
London
and Seattle. Yes. And the reason why you got that date is because one of the pieces of feedback we got from the previous Snapcraft summits is we invite people along and they don't know what it is. And so Martin published a blog post a couple of months ago, which highlights what it is. So we can point people at the blog post.
Ah,
that's the reason why that post exists, is something people can say, what is this thing you're inviting me to? And we can point to it.
So what is this thing?
Well, we originally used to bill it as like a 3-day hackfest. So we invite people from industry and the community and open source projects and all over, and we get together in a room and we hack on making snaps of their applications, products and services for 3 days.
Right. So this isn't an internal canonical sprint to make snaps better. This is to bring people in who are going to release their software as snaps and get them working.
It's a bit of both, really, because there's a whole bunch of canonical people there as well.
Right.
So, yes, the main goal is to get people in, and part of it is have an end result of there being a snap in the store, right? That's the, you know, ultimate goal. That would be success. But along the way, there's, you know, a developer had trouble setting up their development environment, or a developer had a problem packaging their software, or, you know, there was some feature missing. And all of that gets fed back to the Snap developers, who are there as well, and security team, who are there as well, and the Snapcraft people who are there, so that we can kind of push everything forward together. Because it's all very well us saying, here are the tools, go and try it yourself. But actually, what's really, really good is when stuff breaks and you can just shout across the room at someone and get them to come over and look over your shoulder, fixes get landed way faster that way.
So what sort of people from outside Canonical were there? Were there any names that we would know?
Yeah, there are. And this one was also slightly different. So in the past, it's always been purely software focused. So we've been looking at people making snaps of their applications and services. So this time round, we had Travis CI there. We had Amazon AWS there and lots of people from language ecosystems. So Julia, Crystal, CMake, Octave, R, Jupyter, Rust. I mean, there's lots of others that we haven't mentioned, but there was a strong focus this time round on language ecosystems. And then we also had some names that will definitely be familiar to the listeners, such as Godot, the game development platform and engine, and Manjaro, the Linux distribution, and NixOS, the well, I'm not sure I can call it a Linux distribution anymore. It's kind of something else. Now I've been introduced to it. It's quite amazing, but NixOS were there as well.
And people might be forgiven for thinking, why are all those people there? I thought snaps were for my desktop applications like Spotify and Slack. And the fact is we've done all those. We did those. But the fact that Martin mentioned Travis, like this might not be super interesting or applicable to normal people who use their Linux desktop for, you know, surfing the web and editing documents and listening to music and stuff like, you know, normal people do. But Travis is a big deal among software developers and gets used by a huge number of startups and other enterprises for building their software. And one of the things Travis wants to do is streamline how software is built.
So is their interest here enabling Travis as a platform to build snaps, or are they interested in using snaps as part of the build process? Because I know a lot of their stuff happens in containers.
Yeah, both.
Well, right, cool.
I mean, the primary reason they're there is to be able to understand what these language ecosystems need from Travis, but also, you know, can we get snaps of all these languages? Because if a developer is building their software in Travis in the cloud, they might depend on a particular version of Julia or a particular version of CMake or a particular build of Rust. And Travis want to be able to provide that and say, yeah, you know, you want Rust XYZ or Julia ABC, then you can get that. And one of the easy ways to get that is for those things to be published in the store, and then Travis can ingest those and then build software using that. And obviously, because Travis is a service where every minute that the server is up is costing time and money, if they can make it faster and use fewer resources, then it's cheaper for them.
And it turns out that when you deploy languages as snaps, it's about 10 times faster than the bundles that they're currently making that they've got stored in S3 buckets and what have you. So there's some considerable time saving there, and therefore, you know, financial saving on their part. And unrelated to the snap side of things, because they've been to two of these summits with us, they've got become introduced to the LexD team, and in particular Stefan Graeber, who leads that team, and they're looking at making better use of LexD to provide even better efficiency. So, you know, the time it takes to start a container and provision it, they want to, you know, get that down as minimal as possible, and they're able to do that with a combination of LexD and snaps.
So that's the reason why I drew attention to it, is really you know, a lot of the time people talk to us about, you know, this desktop application or that server application like Nextcloud. But the thing that a lot of people don't really get is that snaps can be used for anything. And if you can use it for a language and it's useful to Travis, it might not be useful on a developer's workstation because they might have a weird esoteric setup. But being able to make things better for a developer in the cloud, in Travis CI, is a useful thing as well. And that could result in thousands or millions of deployments of an important snap. So if you're a language developer, it would be a good idea to get your language in the snap store so that Travis can consume it and developers who use Travis can consume it.
So is that the main, you mentioned a number of languages that were represented. Was that their main concern around this, or were they also interested in how their tool chain works in terms of building applications into a snap?
Yeah, there's some of that. So I was sat next to the CMake guy on one of the days, and he'd obviously made snaps of multiple supported versions of CMake, and he sort of muttered under his breath, you know what, I think I'm actually going to start using this. And I said, what do you mean? And one of the properties of snaps is that you can switch between the versions that are published in the store very quickly. And that was something that was a capability that he hadn't had trivially available to him before. So he's, you know, the penny starts dropping that actually it's in my interest to make multiple versions of this application as a snap because it improves my own personal workflow. It speeds up the time it takes me to do things. And I think that that was a, in different ways, that was a realization that a number of the developers we had with us last week started to come to.
It was fun. We had a couple of intro sessions at the start of the week to, and we wrote a document to like bootstrap everyone and a presentation. And we ran, I think we've agreed this is our most successful one of these sprints yet. We've made the process much more streamlined. So, you know, people can get onboarded. If they come along with a laptop, it doesn't matter what OS they've got, whether it's some variant of Linux or a Mac or Windows, we've catered for all of them so they can build stuff on there. But also we introduced a buddy system where everyone had a buddy, a Canonical or a Snapcraft community buddy, who would, you know, be the knowledge expert in Snaps. So they're the domain expert in their language and we're the domain expert in Snaps. And so it meant that no one of us was massively overloaded talking to everyone. We're all spread really nicely around the room, and that worked out really, really well and meant nobody was like super overloaded.
And at the moment we're talking about the room that we were in, to give some context. It was a large room. There was about, 40 people in our room, I think, in total. Quite spaced out. And we were all focused on, you know, software and Snaps. There was another room, the same size, next door. And that was an expansion. And this was the first time we've done this at a summit. We had the recently formed Ubuntu robotics team, with roboticists from industry and academia, working on some projects. And we also had another group, which were our field engineering team, and bring up guys. So these are the people that are into IoT devices and Ubuntu Core. And they were working with groups of people either enabling Ubuntu Core on SBCs or working on IoT focused projects and creating those as Snaps or updating their Snaps or improving their Snaps. So we had this whole thing going on. So it was quite an interesting mix this time.
So of the things that you saw at the event, Alan, what was your favorite thing that came out of it?
I'm going to have to rattle off a few.
Okay.
So one was the fact that there were people who on the first day had never built a Snap, registered in the store, got their store account verified as a verified developer and a verified owner of that application, built their application and published it in the store and made their store page look pretty all by the end of like the first day. They'd just gone from zero to the end goal and having a thing in the store within one day. And that for me, yeah, it was helpful having us there, but it was really, really pleasant, really, really good to see. The big one that I really liked, though, I spent some time sat with one of the Godot developers, and we originally pitched it to them that, you know, we've got this Godot Snap in the store. It's okay. You know, it was kind of thrown together, but it's not perfect. We'd really like it if you took ownership and made it, you know, more shiny, and you could release on your cadence rather than relying on us. And they were up for that. But then I added a bit of a stretch goal. And I said, how would it be if Godot could have an export template where a game developer could just press a button and it spit out a Snap?
Ooh.
And they were like, yeah, that sounds interesting. Let's have a look at that. And so at the welcome drinks on the first night, on the Monday night, the Godot developer was chatting with one of our engineers, Ziga, who's got brain the size of a planet and knows all the internals of SnapD. And they were spent a good couple of hours talking through the intricacies of how they might achieve what it is. And there's certain technical details of how Godot works that make it actually a little bit difficult, but they worked out a solution. It's not done yet, but they've gone quite far down the road. And actually, I've got another meeting with them later on this week. So we're hoping that end goal will be reached soon. So in the future, a software developer who's running Linux could press a button to get Godot, develop their game, and then press a button and it spit out a Snap, and potentially press another button and it upload to the store, which integrating all those things together, given that game developers aren't like normal developers, they're not like normal programmers, they're very creative and not often the kind of technically adept programmer that someone like who programs in C# or, you know, or C++ or something might be.
Careful, we're going to get emails from game developers.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people out there for whom game development is the very first programming they do. Like, they think, oh, I would like to write a game. And they go and get a game engine and they start watching some tutorials. They're not necessarily someone who's been to university, learnt development, and then started writing a game. Although those do exist, of course.
And they probably don't care too much about packaging formats.
Exactly. Which is why in Godot, it's super easy to export out for Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and so on. And we just suggested it'd be nice if it spat out snaps as well. So that was my, greatest part of the week, was working with the Godot developer and getting a successful snap built that was super fast to start, really lean, and has a bright future ahead of it.
Martin, how about you? What was the favorite thing you saw?
There was a few. One, I really enjoyed working with Phil, who's the lead developer at Manjaro, and working through improving the SnapD package in Manjaro, seeing them add the AppArmor profiles to their kernel to get to the point where snaps run completely confined on Manjaro. And we even did the work on the theme integration as well. So I really enjoyed the time I've spent with Phil, and I feel I've made a lifelong friend there, because, you know, we have similar passion projects as, you know, our hobby interests. I also was very taken by NixOS, and Graham Christiansen from NixOS introduced us to Nix, which is a very different kind of distro, and I had no appreciation for just how sophisticated it was.
Yeah, I think I chatted to them at FOSDEM a few years ago in the exhibition there, and it is, yeah, really interesting, the sort of completely different approach it takes.
Indeed. And one of the things it can do is it can take its package repository and it can compose a Docker container or an AMI or a virtual machine or just about anything by saying, this one package, make that into a container or a VM or whatever. And they added the semantics to Nix, which is the tool that does this, to support snaps.
Ah, nice.
And they started with GNU Hello World, which they obviously aced in day one. And then they were like, well, what do we do next? And someone said, well, a graphical application. So they had a go at one of the calculator applications. And on the second try, that was all working. And then they said, well, where do we go from a calculator? And Graham's like, oh, I've got an idea. And off he goes typing. And I'm looking at him, seeing him grinning. And I was like, are you doing a browser? And he's like, yes, of course I'm doing a browser. And I said, okay, well, you need to know this one other thing when you do a browser. And on his first go, got a snap of Firefox working that was entirely composed from the Nix packages. So I was now installing a snap of Firefox on my machine, entirely composed of this foreign operating system using a very foreign, you know, package format. And it all just worked. And that was very interesting, because that opened up a lot of potential for the future. So those were my favorites. And I'm sure, you know, we haven't got all of our colleagues here, and I'm sure all of our colleagues have got three different stories of their own as well.
So what's in store for the next Snapcraft Summit then?
Oh, crikey. Well, first of all, we need to finish off everything that's done with this one before we start the next one. You know, this was 3 days of intensive activity, and there's a load of follow-up to do. You know, we need to check in with everyone and make sure that the things that we agreed would get done are going to get done. And if there are any bugs on our side, we need to chase those down and all that good stuff. So there's a whole load of follow-up. I think we do these, what, every 7-8 months, something like that?
Yeah, it's about that cadence, yeah.
So we haven't planned for when or where the next one is, but I guess that's going to be the next thing. So, yeah, off to Barbados, I think.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would slightly be different. Although, having said that, we have got this idea of doing a micro summit. So we're thinking of doing this, but condensed to one day, initially doing it in London and inviting people from the London area to attend. So maybe we'll get to squeeze one of those in before the end of the year, before we get to do the next big razzmatazz where we go to somewhere exotic.
Great. Well, we look forward to hearing about the next one. And now it's time for some command line love.
Thank you, Mark. This is one that I actually learnt at the Snapcraft Summit last week. I was having trouble with my laptop and I was having a performance problem. Something was going off in the background and I didn't know what it was. And I was sat next to Zigger, and he said, oh, you should use dstat. And I vaguely heard of it, but I didn't know what it was. And so I apt installed dstat, and then you run dstat, and it's very much like top and htop and vmstat all rolled into one, in that it prints out a line every second telling you your CPU usage, idle, disk usage, network bandwidth usage, paging in and out, that kind of stuff. But it's got a system of plugins as well. So you can add things like battery status, fan speed, and all kinds of stuff like that. And the nice thing is you just leave it running in a terminal. And so if there's a problem on your system, when your system recovers, you can alt-tab to that terminal and scroll back and kind of see what went on by looking back through this dstat output, rather than like top and htop, where you only get a single snapshot of what the system's like right now. You've now got a historical record going back however long you had it running in a terminal. It's quite cool.
And you could put that into a log file and grep it and so on. Mm, nice.
Yeah, I guess you could do that as well. The only gotcha is, unfortunately, the project is now archived on GitHub. It's still in the Ubuntu repository, so you can still apt install dstat, D-S-T-A-T. And the documentation is still accessible online, and the man pages all work. But due to some controversial decisions by other distro maintainers, the dstat author kind of threw his toys out of the pram and archived the project, but it still works and it's still a useful utility, so I still recommend it as a thing people should install if they want to monitor what's going on their system.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for some of your wonderful feedback. As ever, we do read it all, but we don't always have the time to read it all out. First up this week, Dave Evans tweeted at Ubuntu Podcast.
I am admittedly very American. I'm not going to do the accent. But I'm from Pittsburgh, where Heinz started. I had never heard of salad cream before this episode.
It's weird. Someone PM'd me on Telegram or IRC or somewhere during the week and just randomly said to me, what is salad cream? I was like, what? And then I twigged that we talked about it. What are we talking about salad cream for?
Things that people have suggested they're going to kill in order to have an upsurge in popularity and sales.
Right. Coke Classic and all that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, salad cream is a very popular sandwich filling and salad dressing in the UK.
It's kind of like mayonnaise, but it tastes nice.
Yeah. My father-in-law used to work for Heinz and regales us endlessly every time we visit with stories about how the Mullacatawny soup test trials went horribly wrong one day.
It does amuse me that Heinz is very much a cultural British icon, and there are many things that every British household has a Heinz thing, but it's actually an American brand.
Yes, indeed. What are your favourite Heinz products? Let us know. Or if you are Heinz, send us some of your favourite Heinz products.
Next up, former Deb Ian project leader Lammy tweeted at Martin.
Just listening to the latest Ubuntu podcast. Always curious to hear you pronounce Deb Ian. Smiley face.
I'm just flicking through the Ubuntu code of conduct to make sure I'm not being marginalised right now.
I actually think Martin's right. He's the only person I know who puts the glottal stop in, but it's named after Deb and Ian, so it is Deb Ian.
Doesn't matter what something is named after, it's a word, and so you pronounce it the way it looks right.
Yeah, which is Debian, not Debian.
Definitely not Debian.
I heard someone say Debian once.
I don't care how people pronounce stuff, but not like that.
Rob Weaver tweeted,
listening to your show this week in regards to MPlayer instead of VLC, I use VLC for streaming to my Chromecasts around the house via Ubuntu. Tip, select render and it will list the Chromecasts in your network that you can use.
Huh.
I never knew you could do that.
Neither did I. Today I learned.
I remember seeing it land, but I don't remember ever trying to use it. So I'm really glad that that works. That's a very handy thing.
Christoph emailed us to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Before you were wondering about any DDoS attacks on your website from your disgruntled Moin Moin fanbase, this wiki software is still alive and kicking. If, for example, this list of wikis, which is a link to a list of wikis, is anything to go by, smiley face. Plus the fact that we, the local lug, have been using this successfully for ages. The only minor issue is a tiny mosaic piece missing ITO not yet complete Python 3 support. I don't know what that means.
I think that's a typo. It's not yet supported.
Ah, okay. P.S. You may want to think about removing the Google Plus link on your website before you fall out even further with the young crowd.
Confused about the Google Plus thing. We removed that months and months and months ago.
I wonder if it's on the old website, the podcast at ubuntuuk.org. I wonder if it's still on that one.
Well, it could be on that one, but nobody looks at that one.
So the wiki software... Yes. The reason that I said we want to move away from Moin Moin is not only because it may be dead, but like nobody else really uses it. Like statistically speaking, nobody uses Moin Moin. There's a lot more support and familiarity with, MediaWiki, especially thanks to, Wikipedia and ArchWiki and others. So I think that's why I gravitated towards that one, but I'm not saying Moin Moin is bad. I used to use it on our lug as well, and I still have a fondness for it.
Sergio mentioned in our Telegram group, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram.
Hey, Mark, on the KDE Connect subject on having properly working Nextcloud clients, from what you said, it seems you are self-hosting. Care to share your hardware and software setup?
I have an HP microserver, which is connected to a Ready NAS 4 Ultra, which has an array of four disks in it. That's running Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, which has the Nextcloud Snap installed. And then I have Nginx in front of that as a reverse proxy, so that it's so you've got Apache running inside the Snap, and that's exposing it on some random port. And then it's got Nginx serving port 80 out to the world. And then I have the Nextcloud client on my phone, which does instant upload of photos. And I have the Nextcloud client on my desktop, which is doing syncing. One small tweak I had to do with the Snap. I have the Ready NAS mounted on the microserver at a directory under media. And then you have to connect up the removable media interface to the Snap. And then you can add, I can't remember what it's called in Nextcloud, but you can add like additional folders outside of the route that you're pointing Nextcloud at. And then those appear in the client as sort of optional sync destinations. So I have some of them synced to some machines and not others. I should write a blog post about this, really.
Yes, you should.
And finally, Jacob wrote us the loveliest review ever on his blog. Thanks, Jacob. And this was contrast by some not family-friendly feedback we can't read out from a fan of the Great Orange One.
Do you use Google Plus? I'm sorry. Feel less alone by giving our post the plus one. Then go to the pub and tell your friends about the Ubuntu podcast.
There's a blast from the past.
Well, it was. It caught me off guard there.
I thought that was appropriate.
Oh, well, time for an end to all this silliness. That's all for episode 12. Not sure what we'll be doing next week. I imagine we'll be discussing some community news, some general goings on, and some events. Maybe we'll have a guest, or maybe we'll have a discussion. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do it so in the usual ways. show@ubuntupodcast.org, we're @ubuntupodcast on Twitter, and you can come and chat with us in between episodes at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram.